And welcome to Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. He is Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Meadow with you for the next 60 minutes as we'll be discussing the big Giants victory on Sunday Night Football over the Dallas Cowboys, 10-7, as they snapped Dallas's 11-game winning streak and they swept the Cowboys for the first time since 2011. So plenty to delve into. We'll get to your phone calls at 201-939-4513. You can also chime in via Twitter, hashtag Giants Chat. Paul, let's start with the defense. Just a tremendous performance all around in terms of containing Dak Prescott, limiting Ezekiel Elliott, especially in the second half. Three takeaways. They got to the quarterback. They prevented the big game-changing plays, and they were extremely opportunistic.
There were a host of guys on this defense who just really had terrific nights. You can start with Janoris Jenkins involved in two takeaways. You can talk about Landon Collins once again coming up with a big play with a fumble recovery. You can talk about Romeo Okwara, who had a JPP-like kind of game. If I showed you his stat line from last night's game, you wouldn't know that was him. You would think it might have been JPP. He was that good.
It led the team in tackles.
Devon Kennard, who had his most impactful game of the season. And by the way, over the last month, as they've used him more as a pass rusher, you see how much he has really evolved as a player.
Versatility.
You know? But if I can for a second, can I just kind of talk about the unsung heroes?
Sure.
Because special teams to me, unsung heroes. Brad Wing did a terrific job punting the ball, and Dwayne Harris twice downed the Cowboys inside the five-yard line. I thought the combination of special teams and defense tilted the field to such a degree. You know, Dallas only had two snaps across the 50-yard line in the entire second half. Two! That, more than anything else, is why they won this game, because we saw Dan Bailey, who hit the crossbar from 55, and it was interesting. They had said on the TV copy that 53 was his range for the night, given the field conditions and the weather conditions and the hardness of the football, and that he thought going to the right of your television screen, he might be able to stretch it a yard or two. As it turned out, 55 was about an inch too long for him.
Yeah.
So my point being, if you don't tilt the field as much as the special teams and defensive combination did, chances are somebody like Bailey winds up hitting the 53-yard field goal a couple of times in the game, and the Giants might lose the field position. Very underrated part of what happened in this game.
Well, and underrated because, remember, the Cowboys came in number one in time of possession, and they're very good at putting together lengthy drives, Paul, regardless of where the drive starts. But the fact that they put the Cowboys with their backs against the wall time and time again, and there were times where Prescott, I mean, he was deep into the end zone, and he had to try to make a pass to attempt a first down so that they could continue to move the chains, and he obviously was not successful more often than not in that category.
Let's hammer home the point, because Dallas, only one time the entire game did they start a drive outside their own 35-yard line, and that was because Eli dropped the ball. Okay? In the second half, their starts, 25, 9, 23, 14, 15, 11, 24, and 3.
So we're not even talking touchback territory. We're talking even further back than that.
We're talking tilting the field. It made a huge difference in this game.
Absolutely, and that's a big reason why the Giants were successful with this three-point victory. The defense set the tone, and we're going to certainly delve into a lot more numbers and statistics. We'll get to your phone calls as we move along here. For those of you watching on Twitter, we invite you over to Giants.com to watch the remainder of the program. Lance Meadow, Paul Dottino with you here for Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. We were focusing on the defense and the special teams. Now, with respect to the offense, Paul, you know, it's still a facet of this team that needs to improve. They struggled on third down. They were just 2 of 14. They had three turnovers. The Giants now have 24 turnovers on the season. That's three more than they had all of last season, just to put things in perspective. You had drops. You had penalties. A lot of self-inflicted wounds, Paul, that prevented drives from continuing.
This game did not have to be as close as it turned out to be. And I know that some people out there are like saying, well, I don't know, because, you know, Dallas made some mistakes too. Don't get me wrong. They had a couple of drop passes, and certainly they had interception opportunities as well. I think both teams are scratching their heads this morning saying, wow, how can we clean up the game that we played? Because they both got a little rough around the edges. But I would say the Giants probably had a better chance to have a two-score lead in this game than Dallas did when you consider Odell Beckham Jr. dropped what should have been at least inside the five, but probably a touchdown pass.
Absolutely.
Roger Lewis is wide open in the end zone when the ball falls out of Eli's hands as he's cocking back to throw. I mean, that could have been two touchdowns right there. So, you know, Barry Church drops a pick, but so did DRC.
Correct.
On the sideline.
There were a lot of plays like that that easily tilted momentum.
No question. So, I mean, I'm not going to just, you know, put this on the Giants and say, well, oh, you know, they had a lot of missed opportunities and they're probably regretting it. I'm sure Dallas does too, because they were. I mean, let's face it, both teams did not bring their A games last night. But I think the one thing that I will take from this is that the Giants were able, I believe it was, to have 14 possessions in the game. And why was that possible? This goes back to what you said about defense. It was actually 15 if you count the kneel down at the end of the game. Seven possessions in the first half, five punts, two fumbles, yep, and the score is only 7-0 at halftime. I said to Jeff Fiegels, right before Bailey tried the 55-yarder, I said, hey, if Dallas gets points here, they start the third quarter, there's a potential that they might actually be up by 2.5, 3 scores on the Giants before they even touch the ball again. That's a death blow. I don't see how the Giants are coming back from that. And what happens? Because of the pressure on Prescott, and then, of course, Free recovered the fumble, but they correctly marked the ball back.
Because Kennard's foot hit him.
Right.
Of all things.
It's a 55-yarder that he does not make. And then to open the third quarter, the Giants have 2 3-and-outs defensively that keeps the score at 7-0, holding the fort for the offense to finally scratch away for some points. I thought, honestly, that those three Dallas series where they came up empty were the most important three series of the game.
No doubt about it. And I also think what also was important about the defensive effort, Paul, is the fact that the offense turned the ball over three times. Cowboys scored no points off of any of those takeaways. I mean, that was huge, because you would think in a game where Dallas wasn't getting great field position, they would look to capitalize off of those takeaways. And this was a team that only had 11 takeaways entering the game, the Cowboys, and they get three in this game alone. You know, sure, it's found money, essentially, for them. They weren't able to cash any of that in, so I think that speaks volumes to the defense. And, you know, another thing I want to point out, you emphasized the pass rush. How many times did Dak Prescott, it seemed, have plenty of time to extend the play, Paul, but could not find anyone open down the field? I think that speaks volumes of what happened on the back end of the defense last night. The coverage from the secondary probably doesn't get enough credit because everything goes to the front seven, but it was what the back end did that gave the front seven an opportunity to get to Prescott.
They were sensational once again. And, you know, we talk all the time about how it goes hand in hand, and there's no question. A pass rush can improve a secondary and vice versa. Last night, they both did pretty good. And, you know, I have to tell you something, Lance. I wasn't sure exactly what Spags was going to do. I wasn't. But I'll tell you this. I think he blitzed on 33%, a third of Prescott's passing plays, which is a high number for him. He usually doesn't come that many times with pressure. And it was a variety of guys. It was DRC's coming on the blitz. Landon Collins is coming on the blitz. Oh, now Kennard's coming on the blitz. Now Shepard's coming on the blitz. Now Keenan Robinson's coming. Spags did a masterful job of mixing up his pressure packages to where Prescott was off balance all night. Now, look, I know that my knock on Prescott was he had not played in bad weather, and the only times that he had done poorly with turning the ball over. Well, he didn't seem to have much trouble in terms of holding the ball because he didn't fumble. But what he did have trouble with was throwing it. Now, some of those throws may have been inaccurate because of the heat or the pressure. Some of it may have been because of the ball being hot, slick, and heavy, or whatever the case may be. But I will say this. Jeff Fiegel said something to me, and I want to relay this to you because this was not my opinion, but it was Jeff's. And Jeff being a player, he knows idiosyncrasies on the field. Jeff said to me at the end of the first quarter, he said to me, Dak Prescott, if you watch him after plays as he's going back to the huddle, he doesn't look the same to me. He looks like he's a bit sluggish. He looks like he's a bit weary. He looks like he's a bit confused. He doesn't look right to me. I think he's feeling it. Was that a combination of the Giants' heat, their confusion, the weather? I don't know. But already at that point, Fegels had said to me, he's not right. He's not going to have a good night.
Well, he looked like a rookie. And in previous starts, he had not looked like a rookie. He looked extremely polished in terms of his decision-making. I think the combination of Spags using different personnel to mix it up with the blitzes,
marvelous.
I think that certainly impacted him. But also, in fairness, to look at it from the opposite side, the first interception that Prescott threw, Dez Bryant slipped, and Janoris Jenkins capitalized there. And
great coverage, though.
No, it was great coverage, but Dez, if you watch the replay, he slips.
He did.
So all Jenkins has to do is make sure that he holds on to that football.
Sure.
That's an interception. The second interception, I was very surprised that Prescott tried to really press the envelope and threw it into double coverage.
He did.
And Leon Hall, who even admitted in the locker room when we played it on the Giants postgame show, he said, all I had to do was make sure I stood there and caught the football.
Oh,
I mean, that was basically a fly ball.
Like what happened with DRC in London.
Correct, exactly. It reminded me of Case Keenum with the Rams. You just got to stand there and let the ball come to you. So, you know, both of the interceptions, I'm not trying to take anything away from the Giants' defense, but I felt that there was either a slippage or there was confusion, and that's what really led to the capitalization for the Giants.
Well, and that's not taking anything away from the defense. That's basically giving credit to Spags for doing what he had to do to mess up the other team's quarterback. And then, of course, they executed. I do think that Prescott felt the heat. Even when he wasn't hit or sacked, he felt it. And I don't think he knew where the guys were coming from. And, you know, without JPP, that's – folks, you know, I talked about this all last week. I liked the matchup for the Giants, and I did like them to win the game. I had been saying that for 2 weeks, even before the Pittsburgh game. But without JPP, I was kind of wavering a little bit. I'm like, you know, how much pressure can they get? Well, Spags pulled out his bag of tricks, and again, Romeo Okwara was just incredible. Devon Kennard was incredible. Vernon had another sensational game. I think he had 8 pressures, Vernon. You know, no sacks, so he doesn't get, you know, the little stat
but that
sheet.
Still impacts
8
the game.
Pressures.
Yeah.
My goodness. This guy's a monster.
Relentless.
And you know what? How about a big thumbs up to JPP, who had hernia surgery, or groin surgery, I should say, groin surgery just a few days ago, and there he is, no crutches, on the sidelines with his team, giving them a pep rally talk right before the game. I mean, wow. Wow. This team has really got some leadership going and some real good chemistry going. Now, that's not to say that they're going to win the Super Bowl, folks. Please don't get carried away with that. But what I am saying is we are seeing right now a core of guys on this team who are not only playing at a high level, but are playing together and have the intangibles to make the Giants relevant. And that hasn't happened, especially on the defensive side of the ball, for a few years now. And that's what's really different about this team. And that's what gives them a chance to do something in the postseason.
Well, it's the complete opposite of 2015. 2015, you'd say the Giants, their identity was offense. 2016, the identity of the team is defense. I mean, they've really turned things around. And one other thing that I want to add real quickly, and then we'll open up the phone lines, is, you know, you mentioned some of the unsung heroes, the Okwaras, the Kennards. I thought specifically, while we give credit to the back end and credit to the front, how about the middle of the field and how well they defended the middle of the field? Jason Witten and Cole Beasley, Paul, had 17 combined catches in week one. And Prescott was dumping it down. He was working the middle of the field. That's how they were so successful. Remember, they had 3 red zone opportunities in week one. They have much red zone opportunities last night because the Giants, to me, took away the security blankets for Prescott. Witten and Beasley had 4 catches apiece, and their open field tackling with guys like Landon Collins pursuing the ball, that was so big in preventing yardage after the catch. And that was a huge difference maker that I don't think is going to get enough credit when you look at how that game played out.
We have a ball possession and drive chart that we get in our game book stats at the end of the night. Both teams combined for 1 possession in the red zone, and that's when the Giants kneeled at the end of the game.
It's remarkable.
That is insane. But that's how great the defenses both played well. Giants defense was better, but both played well. And, of course, the Giants offense was just really not very good. So only one red zone possession, and it was a kneel down. I mean, that's just nuts. But here's the other thing I want to point to you, Lance. And this all goes back to what I'm talking about with chemistry and leadership, and especially on the defensive side, and how the Giants have a core bunch of guys. Remember, we were all talking last year, John Beeson. He's the leader of this defense. He got hurt. Who's going to do it? Who did? Nobody. Dallas Cowboys had one play over 20 yards the entire night. And it was the pass play that went for the touchdown on the busted coverage.
When he was wide open.
That's it. You know, when you've got core guys, but not just one guy that they're all looking to in the huddle, but when you got two, three, four, five guys in that huddle who are all core guys, you don't give up big plays. You just don't. Because they won't let you. You are responsible to them. And they're all talking each other up. And they've all got the chemistry going. They've all got the communication going. And my God, if I got five guys in that huddle, when I'm out there in that 11-man defensive huddle, and I got five guys in that huddle who are all looking at me and saying, don't you let me down, you don't let them down.
Well, we've been talking about this all season, the trust that these players have amongst themselves.
Tremendous trust. And in Spags.
Than what happened last season. And Spags put him in a position to thrive last night, certainly. All right, let's open up the phone lines. 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants chat. Lance Metal, Paul Dottino with you here for Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. Recapping the Giants' 10-7 victory over the Cowboys. So the Giants are now 9-4. Cowboys fall to 11-2. They're separated by two games with three games to go in the season. Let's start things off with Dan, who is in Delaware. Dan, what's happening?
Hey, guys. I've been listening to you guys every day, but I've never called. But after last night, I felt I had to. I'm just so happy for this W. after last week, I was so nervous with our final four opponents that we were just going to go to a tailspin, finish 9-7, and miss out on the playoffs. And after last night, I feel like the pathway to 10 to 11 wins is now right within our grasp, you know, because I've always felt we were going to, out of the last four games, we were going to win that Eagles game. But the Cowboys, Lions, and at Redskins, just that's not easy. And this is going to clear the path for us. I really believe it. The defense, the effort on defense last night was unbelievable. I mean, I'll hold that team to 7 points and, you know, do what we did. You know, Elliott, he got his yards, but he did not wreck this game. And that was the game plan going in, was to stop him. And we did. And other than that one play to Williams where, you know, something got blown in the secondary,
yeah.
their wide receivers and tight ends were not – they made no impact on this game. That effort on defense was among the best I've seen out of this Giants team in years, maybe ever. And you mentioned earlier, guys, the special teams with Wing and the field position. I mean, it was so huge in a situation where our offense is struggling so bad. So it was such a great effort by those two units. The offense, you know, our Eli did not have a good game. You know, the two fumbles, he threw one pick, and he had a couple other ones that could have been picked. Beckham had the drop. There was a couple other drops. But when it mattered the most, our two best players connected. And you just see how much better Beckham is than every other person on the field. I mean, to turn a little five-yard catch into that touchdown is – it just shows you, you know, what he is. And this is what's going to get us in the playoffs. And if we have this kind of defense playing at this level and we get into the playoffs, we could be very, very dangerous. And the only – I didn't want to get any kind of negative on this because I'm so happy about this win. But the only thing I wanted to say, and I got to give credit to my buddy Ivan, who's in Delaware also. He's been preaching on this for a long time. And I know, Paul, you've been very resistant to this idea. But now that Pugh is coming back, he's basically announced on Twitter he's playing next week.
Yeah. Well, he told us he was going to play this week, too, and the doctors wouldn't let him.
All right. Well, assuming he's playing next week.
Yes.
With how well Newhouse has played at left guard, and with how poorly Flowers is just a disaster. He's a disaster. Every game, he has a holding penalty or there's a sack that leads to a turnover, a fumble. Every game this happens, and it crushes drives and it turns the ball over. With how poorly he's playing, I really feel in my heart that Pugh has to go to left tackle and Newhouse stay at guard, and you keep everybody the same, because Flowers is a disaster, and this offense has to put up more than 10 points if we're going to do anything. Like I said, I didn't want to go negative on this call. I just throwing it out there because we got to score more than 10 points, because you can't expect this out of the defense every
week. Of
course.
No, you can't bank on that happening.
Yeah.
You can't. You can't expect your defense to have the pressure every single game to say, we're just going to hold the opposition to a touchdown or a touchdown and a field goal, because some games you're going to have some breakdowns.
Are you open to that move on the offensive line? Because Flowers is a disaster at this point.
You know what? Whether or not we are, it doesn't matter. It's up to the coaches to decide where he's going to play, and I don't think they're going to move him. Now, I personally would not do it. I know he's had a lot of troubles, but, you know, I say this all the time, and we all say this around here. I mean, in football, it's the third year where the guy really proves what he is or what he is not. Flowers played 1 year at right tackle in college, two years at left tackle, came out a year early, okay? And so he gets the full 3 years. If next year, at this time, he's doing everything that he's done this year with the sloppiness, the penalties, the mistakes, then you could tell me that something's got to be done. But he's not there yet.
I agree with you, Paul. I hear what you're saying, I guess. But I've also heard you preach a lot on this show over the years that you have to put your best five out there.
He is.
And I don't know how you can say – like I hear what you're saying about the third year, but with us having this type of a defense right now, and Flowers could be the guy that's holding this whole thing back.
Young guy, so you probably don't remember William Roberts, who wound up going to the Pro Bowl and was on a Giants Super Bowl championship team. William Roberts, when he first got to the Giants, they had drafted him at the end of the first round. They had acquired the draft pick in a trade with the Redskins, and they got him at the end of the first round. And when he started, they didn't know if he was going to wind up being a guard or a tackle because he was overweight. He had bad work ethic. And for the first couple of years he was here, it was like, really? This guy is not really worth a whole lot of anything. He was just dreadful. We're talking bust with a capital B. And what happened?
He wasn't the number nine. He wasn't the number ninth overall pick.
But here's my point. Forget about where he was taken. The point is, he was nothing at the beginning. And then within 3-4 years, all of a sudden, William Roberts was one of the most valued members of an offensive line that won a Super Bowl. It can happen. Trust me, it can happen. I have seen it. On the other hand, Eric Moore, number one pick out of Indiana, came to the Giants, was a total washout, did not have a good attitude, did not have a good work ethic, and never amounted to anything. And in fact, in Super Bowl 25, Parcells had to yank him out of the lineup at halftime because he was playing so poorly and he was throwing up because he was so nervous and had so much anxiety that Bob Cratch had to go in and finish the second half of that game when they beat the Bills. Okay? So it can go either way. For that reason, you got to give him his third year.
And, Dan, listen, appreciate the phone call. We want to get to a number of people. Appreciate that. One other thing that I want to throw out, I think you need to look at it through the lens of Justin Pugh, too. And when Justin addressed the media earlier this year, and this was during the regular season, this wasn't in the preseason or training camp, Paul, he mentioned that the reason why, in his opinion, he's comfortable in playing at a higher level this year is because they finally have decided he's a guard. And that they're not going to move him around. And he felt that he's much more comfortable since he can specifically focus his reps on being a guard. And remember, when they had some injuries with Newhouse on the tackle side, right side, you know, in years past, they may have considered moving Pugh from left guard to right tackle.
He did.
And that did happen. But notice that did not happen. And I'm telling you
not
the reason
this year.
Why. But the reason why it didn't happen is because of the conversations they've had with Justin Pugh, and Pugh saying, I'm comfortable at guard, and I think if you leave me there, there's going to be better continuity and better production out of me. And I get the argument, you want your top five offensive linemen on the field. I get that, and no disagreement.
And I agree with that.
But I think that there's also something to be said that Pugh is comfortable staying at that guard spot. He's been playing very well at a high level. He's comfortable with the communication with Flowers and Richburg, and I don't know if you now, all of a sudden, this late in the season, want to toy with that.
See, the devil's advocate will say, but didn't you guys value David Deal because he was able to play four different positions on the offensive line? And that's true, and he gets praise for that, okay? The difference here is that the Giants do have a guy they've invested in to play left tackle. They've had four different left guards next to him, and do not underestimate how that has affected Flowers' play.
Exactly.
I know it's his own sloppiness. I get that. But if there was a consistent left guard there throughout the course of the season, I promise you he would have played cleaner than he has had to this point. I promise you that. The continuity factor is critical. He's had four left guards.
Well, when I was on with David Deal last week, I asked him about when you play next to different guards. He said the footwork, the hand movement, I mean, it's all based on who's next to you. So you can't overlook the fact that he's had four different guys, yeah, there's going to be some issues. I think that Newhouse's value moving forward once Pugh comes back, Paul, is going to be like they used Newhouse before, in the jumbo package.
I hope so.
The additional offensive lineman.
Oh, please.
Because when they brought
him in. Would
you
talk to Coach for me?
Well, I'm just throwing it out there. I don't know if he's going to listen, but I'm going to throw it out there, at least for the audience perspective. When they've used him in that role, I think the Giants have had some success on the ground. That's where I think Newhouse's value could be moving forward once Justin Pugh comes back.
I totally agree, and that will be important because, as you know, in the last 4.5 minutes of the game yesterday, the Giants had to punt the ball twice. Okay? They could not go into a – look at this. It's ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. They punted it away with 2:46 to go and then punted it away again with 1:15 to go. Twice in the last 3 minutes, the Giants had to punt the ball because they could not run out a four-minute offense that would grind the clock to zero. As Henry Yanosky sits here in the room with us off camera and knows exactly the kind of pain that I'm feeling when I see that.
And the Giants' defense came through, fortunately, to make those stops. But you just don't want to keep putting the defense in that position. That's why the importance of the run game in the final few minutes, it goes without saying. That's how they won week one with the Cowboys. They were able to run the football. I know Dallas got the last possession, but that previous possession with Brett Jones as the fullback, they milked a good four-plus minute section off the clock.
And you know what? Let me just say one thing, and I'm not trying to be funny here, but Dallas got that ball back in Dallas, and all the Dallas folks tried to claim, and the Dallas fans tried to claim, well, Williams didn't run out of bounds, didn't stop the clock. And look, DRC forced him to run in bounds. But here's the point. All we kept hearing was Dallas won 11 games in a row. They're more mature. They're better. Prescott's better. Elliott's better. Well, guess what? Prescott had the ball with a chance to tie or win the game with a minute plus to go to drive the length of the field just like he did in Dallas.
Identical situation.
And how far did he get? His own 3-yard line. So much for the better and improved Dallas Cowboys.
Well, but here's the other thing to look at it. I think that the Giants' defense at the same time has
also
improved
better.
Too.
Also
so
better.
So when you look at how
no
far
doubt.
Both of these teams have come from week one. I don't think it's a stretch to say Prescott and Elliott certainly have improved and are different players. But at the same time,
true.
The Giants' defense has improved too.
But I had to hear that all week from all the folks who thought this was a landslide for the Cowboys because supposedly the 11-game winning streak and these two rookies were now so much better, the Giants weren't even going to be close in this game. That's what I had to hear from a lot of people. Not you, but a lot of people. Could not have been further from the truth because this Giants defense has, like you said, immeasurably improved. And isn't it better to be on the upswing in December than on the down?
We've seen that. A lot of wild card teams that have won Super Bowls, including the New York Giants. Let's head back to the phone lines. 201-939-4513. We've got Spencer in Wontaw. Spencer, what's happening?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Doing well, Spencer. What do you got for us?
You know, first, Paul, I wanted to answer your question. Yes, it does feel much better being on the upswing in December.
Okay.
I don't think anybody's going to disagree with that, though.
First off, I just want to say about Spags. I mean, what a way to redeem himself. Last week was a tough week, and I thought the game plan, the scheme, Dak looked like he was baffled. He didn't know what he was seeing. He was going through his progressions, looking off. The pass rush was great. Just want to say the defense was unbelievable. But that really brings me to my next point, was on the offense. I hear what you're saying about Flowers. You know, maybe the year three would be the better year where he starts to come into his own. But, I mean, last night there were times where I was worried Eli was going to get hit. I mean, it was like...
Oh, he did get hit. He did. Trust me.
Took a number eight.
Yeah. I mean, you know what? Eli would get hurt is really more where I want to say.
Right.
You know, I don't know if maybe being the way the defense is playing, if we almost switched up our approach on offense, maybe start going double tight, bring Adams in, leave Ty on the field, maybe use him as an H-back, give Flowers more help, you know, maybe get out of the no huddle, start huddling up a little more ball control.
Now, were you at the game or did you watch it on TV?
No, I watched on TV, Paul.
All right, now, the only thing I can tell you, we had a monitor in the box when I was sitting with Jeff Fiegels, and they flashed a graphic at the beginning of the third quarter. I guess Michelle Tafoya had talked to both coaches at halftime, and she was relaying, I guess, their comments, and then they gave us a graphic with a one-line comment. And apparently McAdoo had said to her at halftime, we're going to have to give Flowers some help. Do you remember seeing that?
I don't remember seeing that at half now. But
yeah, early in the third quarter, and I don't know if she expanded on that in her conversations because I don't have the volume on when I watch. I purposely watch to concentrate on what I'm seeing. But obviously Coach McAdoo understood the situation, you know. Flowers was having a tough time, and if it was considered so bad that Coach McAdoo had to make a change, he would have pulled him out of the lineup, okay? He would have, because he did have some healthy bodies. He had Brett Jones. He could have put him in a guard and moved Newhouse out to tackle. My point to all you fans who want to crucify Eric Flowers, if it was so bad, the coach would have made a change in-game. Because the Giants were in a battle, a tug-of-war, an absolute steel cage match. And if he thought that Eric Flowers was the reason they were going to lose that game, he would have pulled him out of the game.
Well, and I think there's another example that you could go to on the defensive side of the ball this year to see if they feel a player is troubling themselves mentally or physically.
They pulled Eli Apple. Either.
Exactly. Eli Apple was going to be the guy I was going to name. So I think it's been there before. They've done that before. I think if there was reason to say we need to pull Flowers, because we're worried about the well-being of the game, I think they had more than enough time to do that.
Absolutely.
Right. I mean, what do you think about that, though? I mean, it did seem like they were trying to do that. They were pounding the run. I mean, I thought Perkins played great last night. I wish he was in the game a little bit more in those later drives when they went three and out the last two possessions.
No, he was in the game. They were on a 3rd and 11, and he ran for 9 yards on one of their final possessions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
Yes, you're right. The last run, he was close. Yeah, I just think that maybe that would be, you know, that might be the move here with this. This is a, dare I say, championship caliber defense. You know, this is legit. If we could figure out the offense to maybe, you know, control the ball a little more, you know, break that, like, even if it's like yesterday, that one big play to Odell and get this thing going, I mean, I feel like maybe that's the way to go. Because if Flowers is on the edge by himself, it's going to be a problem going forward.
The last two drives, it was exclusively Jennings, but with about 6 minutes left, Perkins did have one. And then they went to the experienced guy. And I honestly think at that point, it was simply, hey, the veteran who's been through all this before, we're going to trust him with the ball.
Well, remember,
I think that's what happened.
But against the Bengals, they used Jennings. They closed out the game with the run. And then, as I mentioned in week one with the Cowboys, they used Jennings too. Vereen was healthy then as well, but Jennings was involved in that.
At that
final
point
drive.
In the game also, you know, everyone's in the box, and you're going to probably need more power than you are speed. There's not going to be much room to do any juking.
And you also don't want to pick up penalties. Nothing against Perkins, but he had a false start penalty.
Yes,
and
he did.
That's two in as many weeks. Last thing you want to do is move backwards when you're trying to milk clocks. So that's another thing.
Right. I hear you.
All right, Spencer.
Thank you.
Appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for chiming
Good
in.
Good phone call.
Let's head back to the lines. We got Rich in Trenton. Rich, what's happening?
Hey, what's going on, guys? Angry Giants fan on Twitter.
All right, well, good to hear from you, Rich. What do you got for us? That's some Twitter handle, by the way.
Yeah, really.
Okay. So
when do you change it to Happy Giants fan, by the way, Rich?
Yeah, I'm not so angry today, but I am still a little angry.
Okay, go ahead.
All right, well, what do you got for us?
All right, I got three quick points, man. Two of them are good. So we're going to just start with saying, hey, big win. I feel like Minnesota kind of put the book out on Dallas, and we executed on that. You know, you shut down Witten and Beasley. You know, Ezekiel's going to get his. But overall, I think we did a good job in shutting down that short pass game, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I thought that I said this to Henry earlier. When's the last time you remember the Giants being involved in a Dallas Cowboys game and Jason Witten was not a major factor? But last night, if you watch the game closely, I guess he caught a 13-yard pass for first down, right, which was an important one. Other than that, he was a non-factor in the game, and at different times during the game, there were different guys on him. I saw DRC on him at one point. I saw Robinson on him at one point. I saw Casillas on him at
Collins
one point.
Was on him too.
Collins was on him at one point. Spags was just like, you know what? We're just going to throw all kinds of stuff at him and see how he does. And it worked.
Well, Witten only had four catches, but I think what was also key, and I brought this up early, and we'll let you continue. I didn't mean to cut you off there. In terms of when he got a catch, sometimes Witten is good with yardage after the catch. They hit him immediately. They brought him down so that he wasn't elusive and able to pick up an additional 4 to 5 yards.
Yeah.
That, to me, was big last night.
Well, the tackling overall was outstanding, by the way. I didn't count officially. I'm not done with the tape yet. I was up till 5 in the morning. Probably 5 or 6 missed tackles the whole game by the
and
Giants.
That may be too high, to be honest with you.
They were really good.
Yeah.
Yeah, just to tack on, you know, tight ends have been a weakness for us all season. You know, we saw what Eifert did and a few other
Darius
tight
Green
ends.
Darius Green last week.
They kind of lit us up.
Absolutely. No, it's been a trend. I mentioned Ladarius Green last week, too, in the Pittsburgh game.
That's right.
You're 100% right, Rich. That had been a troubling aspect. And Jason Witten did a lot of damage in week one, too. And he had, I read this on the pregame show, he had 7 touchdowns in the last 7 games against the Giants. I mean, he thrives against this team. So for them to limit him to 4 catches for over 20 yards, it's very impressive.
Yeah. My next point, okay, Paul D started off the show. We got to give Brad Wing and Dwayne Harris a game ball. I mean, that punting game was masterful, right? It got to the point where we were actually using Brad Wing as a weapon, right? We get up there.
It's been that way all year. It's been that way all year. Be fair.
Running on third down because we know Brad Wing is going to put the ball where it needs to be. They deserve game balls.
Absolutely, Rich. And listen, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for chiming in. That's why you mentioned it's not just the defense, it's the special teams. 5 inside the 20.
On 9 punts.
And then the last one to me was the biggest, which was down to the 3.
Goodness.
And Dwayne Harris certainly was in perfect
position.
Twice
Dwayne Harris did that to them. I mean, again, folks, I know when Dwayne Harris got here, a lot of people didn't understand it, but if you had seen him play for the Cowboys, you understood the value he brought to the table in 5 different areas. Kickoff coverage, punt return, kick return, and wide receiver. Multifaceted. He's a Swiss Army knife. And in terms of tilting the field, he's invaluable.
Yeah, a guy that could hustle back and down the football and prevent a touchback, I mean, that gets easily overlooked. How do you even put a price on that?
You can't. You can't.
This is where it becomes valuable, late in the season when you need field position.
How many times you see a guy try to do that, and because maybe he doesn't have really good hands, because a lot of times they're defensive backs who are on kick coverage, and because maybe they don't have great hands, they touch the ball, they bobble the ball, they knock the ball into the end zone, it goes out of bounds or whatever. Whatever the case may be, they can't actually down it and make the play. Dwayne Harris has receiver hands. He's got soft hands. He goes down and he's like, hey, I'm going to catch the ball. It's good. It's cool.
And what's interesting is since he joined the Giants, he's turned things in Cowboys-Giants games. Because remember the game here last year where he had
the kickoff
return. And that turned out to be a deciding factor. You see the special teams play.
Cowboys still haven't replaced him.
Yeah, they have not. And they were without his replacement because he violated a team rule. Lucky Whitehead. All right, let's head back to the phone lines. We got Chris in Jersey. Chris, what's happening?
So, go Giants. It's a good day when the Giants beat the Dallas Cowgirls. It's just a good day.
Okay.
All right, Chris. All right. So what do you got?
Lance, that was especially for you, Lance.
For me?
We love you on Giant Network here. We love you.
Well, we appreciate that.
I thought it was a great game yesterday. I thought the defense really stepped up. And a lot of guys said a lot what I was going to say, but I'm just going to get back on the Flowers, Eli Manning situation. We're not going anywhere with Flowers playing the way he's playing. And we're not going to go anywhere with the way Eli is playing. Eli has had a terrible year. Fumbles, interceptions, cold ball, no cold ball. Okay. He's played in the cold weather before. I feel that we probably should have went for a right tackle, a left tackle, during the free agency somewhere along the line, and we should have probably, it's my opinion here, I think a lot of Giants fans feel this way, taking Flowers out of the left spot and putting him in the right spot. He's a number nine pick first round. He was touted a 25-27 first rounder, maybe an early second rounder at the time. He has good feet. He's always had bad hands, always has had bad hands since his 2 years in college. And we've had Flanagan teaching him. We have Solari trying to teach him. He's not getting it, Paul. He's not getting the hands. He's terrible. And you know what? If it wasn't for Eli's good physicality, he'd be killed right now. This guy cannot play left tackle. He's third year in that. He's a number nine pick. He should be good by now. If he was a 22nd or a second round, I'd give you the third year. He stinks right now as a left tackle. Give me all the scenarios you want about the left guard and all of this stuff. I get it. But why is he the only player on that line that can't go to another position, Paul? Everybody else we get, whether it's through free agency or we pick up a journeyman or someone off the practice squad, plays every position except for Jerry Reese's Flowers at left tackle. I think they know they made a big boo-boo here. I think changes are going to be made in the future. But right now we have to live with what we have. I get it all. I get it all. But he's not playing good. And I think Eli Manning, I played football, and I was an offensive lineman in a little semi-pro and some good football. You're in a quarterback, when your quarterback's getting killed, all right, your quarterback tells you about it. They're a little nervous back there, too. They don't want to get whacked around. And I think Eli Manning, the pro that he is, has taken some hits lately in the last few games. And I'm not happy with the play. If we're going to go anywhere deep in this, we've got to play better. Really, we really do. We have to cut, got to protect the rock, and we've got to get better play out of this line. And Pugh coming back, my last point, and I love to hear what you guys have to say because you're really important in my life. I love you guys on this station.
Well, we appreciate that. Thanks for tuning in. Did we lose him? I don't know if we lost him, but he was about to ask another question.
I know. What happened? Dave, did he go away?
There. Looks like we may have lost Chris. But anyway, he was all obviously right. Discussing a variety of different factors out of this game. And, I mean, I understand his point about the offensive line and so forth. You know, Eli saw a lot of pressure in yesterday's game. He was sacked three times, took a number of hits. You know, he impacted his decision-making, impacted the ball, and so forth. We get all that. And we've seen that in previous games too, Paul. This is not the first game where Eli seen pressure this season.
I'm going to make it real simple. Right now, he's the best left tackle or the guy best suited to play left tackle on this roster. That's why he's playing it, okay? And that's why they're not making the change. Whether or not you think they should have done something during the offseason or that they should do something this next offseason, you can debate that all you like. That's fine. That's open to debate. What is not open to debate is right now he's the best they got. And so you're going to have to live with it. And somehow they've gotten to 9-4 with him playing left tackle. And I might add, last year he played through a severely sprained ankle for most of the season that would have knocked most guys out of the lineup. But he was able to fight through it. But nobody seems to give him any credit for that. And you know what? I didn't go to Miami, so I have no affiliation to the Hurricanes. But I'm fair. I look at the facts. I'm fair. I'm reasonable. I understand a lot about what goes on, not only on the field, but behind the scenes and what these guys go through. Eric Flowers was hurting bad last year. Serious sprained ankle that continued to get worse and worse. And he continued to aggravate during the season. And yet, he gutted it out for the betterment of the team. And I know that had to hurt his work habits, and that had to hurt his technique. I'm not excusing any of it. What I'm telling you is, the fair and rational thing to do is to understand you have what you have, you try to polish it up right now as best as you can, you spit shine it a little bit, And then in the offseason, you sit down, you make some decisions, you try to address it then, and I'm telling you, you got to go 3 hard years with somebody with that kind of size, strength, power, and ability before you give up on him just because you don't like his technique.
Let's head back to the phone lines. We've got a number of callers on the line. I want to try to squeeze everybody in. Start with Keenan in Virginia. Keenan, what's happening?
Yeah, I was just calling. I listen to your off show quite a bit. And I understand that Eli's getting pressured a lot, which in turn is making his play worse. But at the same time, Eli's a 14-year veteran, and I don't see the mistakes he's making. I don't see a 14-year veteran.
Well, mistakes like what? Can you give an example?
Well, I mean, I understand the fumbles last night were a cause of him getting hit in the backfield. I get that. But the three, what should have been all three interceptions only turned into one. But there's got to be something that Eli's not doing right, something bothering Eli other than just pressure. I don't get it.
Well, there's been examples, Keenan, where, some of his throws have been off. I mean, if you go back to the Cleveland game in that first half, he had some opportunities to hit Odell Beckham down the field and, just was not necessarily on the mark with some of his throws.
Did Eli put the ball in Beckham's hands inside the 5-yard line on the run on a bomb last night that should have been a touchdown? Yes. Did he have Roger Lewis wide open in the back corner of the left corner of the end zone and the ball just slipped out of his hands because it was cold and wet and slippery? Yes. Did he have another Odell Beckham drop that could have been a key first down, although I don't know if he would have made it or not. It would have been a key first down. Yes. Did Victor Cruz drop another ball that was right in his hands yesterday? Yes. I'm tired of these Eli bashers. I'm really tired of it. He's not playing great, man. He's been inconsistent. But, geez, my goodness.
Well, last night, I think what Paul just laid out, Keenan, is the fact that, there were a lot of other mishaps for the players around him that contributed to the lack of efficiency. There are other games, as I noted, where you could point to, Eli maybe had some guys down the field and he wasn't able to connect. But last night is not the game that I would use and bring to the forefront to say that Eli was off the mark.
For every person who says that Eli is bad and he's the problem, well, why is it that the same people cry bloody murder about the offensive line? Think about that. You can't do it. The quarterback is getting freaking killed. He has taken so many hits over these last several years, the last 5 years in particular. It's any wonder he's even going back in the game again.
That's
ridiculous.
Very true. I agree with everything you all said for sure. I don't know. I feel like that Some reads could have been made better, but, all quarterbacks make mistakes,
Look, he's been inconsistent. I don't mean to get on your case. I'm frustrated because you just happen to be the tipping point from so many people who've been doing this to Eli. He's been inconsistent. He has not had a great year. I'm going to tell you that. But his touchdown interception ratio is still 2-1. You'd like it to be 2.5-1, but it's still 2-1. The Giants are 9-4. I still think going into a postseason, if you asked any of the other postseason coaches or GMs at the end of this month, rank the quarterbacks who are in the playoffs, where would Eli be? He'd be one of the guys they would want to play for them. I guarantee it.
And Keenan, appreciate the phone call. 21 touchdowns, 13 interceptions right now for Eli Manning on the season in terms of the ratio that you mentioned. And here's the other thing, just from a big picture perspective, because we hear it every week, people on Eli Manning, his inconsistent play, and I get that it's been well documented, but what's the alternative, Paul? What's the alternative?
Okay, Joe Pisarcik.
You're unhappy with the inconsistency. Okay, I get that. But what's the alternative? Like, people want to complain, but then you have to look at what's option B.
Look,
you're not benching Eli Manning.
I went through this when Phil Simms was here. There were people who continued to rip Phil Simms because they said he fumbled the ball too much, he threw too many interceptions. Same thing, turnovers. Phil was making too many mistakes. He was turning the ball over. There were some people who booed Phil Simms, for goodness sakes.
They still do.
And Parcells would always say, you guys are going to be sorry. You're going to be saying years from now, the next guy ain't no Phil Simms. And you know what? took them a long time to find another franchise quarterback, and it's going to take the Giants another long time probably after Eli is gone to find another guy who can bring him back to a Super Bowl. Anyway, I want to say something real fast because I got these tweets here, and these are important to what we were talking about before. EZ says, you said the same thing with Newhouse and Hart. Hart has outplayed Newhouse and been doing better each week. But that's the point, you see? Because when Bobby Hart, who was also considered to be an underachiever at the time, he got in and he took the spot. And the coaches said, hey, you know what? He deserves to stay. And that's why Bobby Hart's still the starting right tackle. Because as Coach McAdoo has said, and Coach Solari, the offensive line coach, the best five are out there. Hart deserves to be the starting right tackle. He seized the job. So guess what? Newhouse wasn't getting it done like Hart was. Newhouse became the sixth offensive lineman. They'll make the change if they see it. So don't think that they're just gluing these guys in and not going to move them. They'll make the change. Newhouse became the sixth offensive lineman. Okay? That's the way it works. And the other thing is, this guy says to me, there was a tweet after Flowers got Eli killed by LeCharles Bentley. Now, I bring this up because he runs the offensive line school
worked with some Giants
in Arizona.
Yes.
He's worked with Richburg and with Jerry. And LeCharles Bentley said, when defenders begin to just run around offensive line, it's mental. They lose sense of what to do and end up doing nothing. You know what? I applaud anybody who says Eric Flowers needs to go get some schooling. In the offseason, go to LeCharles Bentley School. Maybe go to a martial arts school. Maybe go to a dexterity school. To me, it's obvious. Eric Flowers has trouble with his footwork. He has trouble with his hand placement and his punch. He has trouble with his balance. These are all things that can be worked on. I would love to see him, instead of just doing the offseason program, I would love for John Jerry and for Weston Richburg or Justin Pugh, who wound up doing Greco-Roman wrestling.
Yeah, he did, well, and he also did it with Glazer.
Yes.
Justin
he
Pugh
did martial arts, too.
Yes.
To enhance, I would, Eric Flowers, by all means, please, go to one of those enhancement schools for martial arts or for O-line. Take the extra time, go to one of those schools, and get coached up, okay? Because this isn't just about football. This is about a guy who needs to improve his physicality and his dexterity. You know, maybe part of the problem is that he's not athletic enough or doesn't know how to physiologically move his body in the proper technique that they're trying to teach him. Maybe he just needs to gain more flexibility. Could be. I know guys who've done martial arts for years who tell me that it has made them better football players because it's improved their flexibility and their athleticism and their dexterity. So maybe that's what Eric Flowers needs. So go in the offseason, Eric. Go to one of the schools and get yourself straightened out.
Well, and I'm sure he's talking to his fellow offensive linemen who have experienced that in the offseason, and perhaps he gets some feedback from them to determine what he wants to do.
Maybe.
I remember this past offseason, priority number one for him was to get fully healthy after dealing with that ankle injury.
No question.
This offseason, now that he's healthy, perhaps now you can toy with doing something to help your technique and so on.
That's an outstanding point, Lance, because he needed months to get back from that sprained ankle.
Of course, he needed to regroup, so he couldn't play around with the technique
great
so
point.
Much. I think
great
this
point.
Offseason is going to be extremely critical for him from that perspective. Let's head back to the lines. Stephanie is in West Virginia. Stephanie, what's happening?
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you.
I can hear a pin drop because the Dallas Cowboys fans, they all quiet and silent. You should have saw the Skip Bayless show. He was so dumbfounded. Well, anyway, the Dallas, we made the Cowboys look like the Dallas Choke Boys last night. Great defensive game plan. If there was a category for defensive coach of the week, Spags definitely would win it or hand. Now, the conditions in MetLife Stadium were difficult. I'm watching the pregame warm up with the snow fell down the ground, the ball is still wet. It was a game for sloppy football, a game that was built with running football. Well, Well, we had difficult running the football. Now, I'm not gonna, I'm not gonna criticize Eric Flowers and all that, you know, because he had to learn a new scheme again after from a new offensive line coach. So he had to fall asleep with that. But I think there was one play that Eli did like a fake end around, and it kind of fooled the Cowboys defense. I mean, it wouldn't hurt if we ran a couple of those kind of trick plays, play action and all that. I'm not going to criticize the receiver for dropping the ball, because in the end, Odell did catch the money catch. And Odell, I mean, Dez Bryant didn't, and the Cowboys can't let Dez Bryant have it as well as Jerry Jones. But I want to say this real quick, and then I'm going to get off the line. A solution, I was thinking about this, a solution to the running game, why not, I believe it's Will Tye. Why not try Will Tye out as a running fullback? You know, kind of like that role the Redskins, the real young. Even on the goal line, we get in the red. I mean, I think he has the body type, and he has the physicality, and he speed, you know, to alleviate some of that pressure of Eli and that offensive line. I just think the schematics need to be tweaked a little bit to offset some of the deficiencies that we have. And I hope I did a motivational video. I don't know all the Giant fans saw it, but I took a cue off John Harbaugh. I said the broom is your sword and sweep the Cowboys, and hopefully that helped network, and that's all I got to say.
All right, Stephanie.
When we swept the Cowboys.
Thank you.
Got it.
My call.
Appreciate the phone call.
Sure thing.
In terms of Will Tye going to fullback, it's interesting she brought that up because, Paul, I feel as if when Ben McAdoo's been asked about Will Tye, one of the things he always brings up is he tells Will Tye the pad level and where he needs to play.
Right.
So I think one of the issues that Will Tye would be facing if he moved to fullback is, can he get low enough consistently to be that lead blocker?
Yeah, it's a mentality, but it's also, again, a physiological thing.
Because you're a taller player.
He's
not
built to
get down low.
He's not built to do it.
Same thing with Larry Donnell. I mean, that was the issue he's been having in terms of getting down low. I mean, when you're 6'6", it's not easy to do with pads on.
It's not that it can't be done, but it's just harder to do.
Exactly. Yeah. Send back to the phone lines. Mike is in Oakland. Mike, what's happening?
Hey, guys. Great to celebrate the win. You know, beating the Cowboys makes my week a heck of a lot better. And I just want to, you know, give a quick shout-out to the defense. Not going to single anybody out because they all played so well. They played well together. The scheme was good. The effort was amazing. All our money guys showed they're all worth it. So just big props there. But I just want to kind of comment on Eli's performance. And I just want to remind everybody that, you know, when Eli believes in his offensive line, he'll stand in there. He'll take the hits. And I just remind you about the 2011 NFC Championship game in San Francisco.
Yep.
I mean, that was a physical, brutal game, and Eli got beat up. But he stood there, played a great game, made passes. And he believed in his offensive line, and he believed in their chance to win. And that's the thing I've kind of observed about him over the years. I think, like, if he thinks he's got a real chance to win and he believes in the offensive line, his feet get quiet, you know, he sets, he makes the throws, and he looks like, you know, one of the best quarterbacks
ever played. He makes a good point. I'll tell you what, I think all of Eli's really harshest critics must be 4.5 years old because they never saw that game.
Yeah.
Well, they never saw that game.
To showcase his toughness. Yeah.
They never saw it.
So they've seen a lot of happy feet and, like, just chucking the ball and interceptions at crucial times, and we've seen him be, you know, steady in the pocket, and, you know, he really the whole postseason he really didn't get any interceptions. And you know, in the game against the 18-1 Patriots, the only interception in the whole postseason was that ball that was like thrown up into the air by Steve Smith. That you know,
right.
He shouldn't even gotten tagged with that. So, but I just want to say one thing about Flowers. You know, we all want him to succeed. Number 9 pick, showed his toughness last year. PDOT, I agree with you wholeheartedly on that. But what I see is the guy needs martial arts training because his hands are always outside the defender. I mean, even on, if you look at Odell's TD, his hands are outside Mayawa's body because Mayawa does a spin. Instead of having his hands in tight and hitting him, we could have gotten a holding penalty on that play too, and then the game's lost.
I have him unofficially down for 5 sacks allowed this year, and 4 of them came around the edge. And that's an indication of what we're talking about. I'm with you. If martial arts is the way to go, then do it. Get them to martial arts in the off season.
Hey, I'd pay for it. Thanks, guys. Great work.
All right, Mike. Appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for chiming in. Let's hear from Joe in Pennsylvania. Joe, what's happening?
Hey, great to hear from you guys. I don't want to blast too much there. I want to ask Paul, do you know on that one play where it was near the end of the game, Eli threw the ball way down the field real quick to Beckham, what went on there on that one? And Beckham had to break it up there. It was a sideline, like he hurried up there like before. I don't know if Dallas was trying.
I remember the play. I think he either thought that he had caught Dallas with too many men on the field or in a bad substitution pattern. So he went like super duper quick, went right up to the line, tried to snap the ball, and went down the left sideline to Odell. He went deep. Obviously, the fact that he went deep meant that he must have thought it was either a free play, because maybe he also thought that Dallas was with too many men on the field.
That's exactly what I think it was.
So he thought it was a free play and took the shot deep. Or he just saw something that was just like, oh, my God, you know, we just got something here. And he took a shot, and Odell did a really good job to break it up.
Yeah, that's what I thought happened there, too.
I didn't talk to Eli about it, so I don't know, but that would be my assumption.
Right. The other one there, I know it was a quick play, like he almost rolled out his right up, was on the right sideline there. The guy did intercept the ball but then dropped it. I don't know
you're
what
talking
Eli
about Barry
saw
Church.
There.
Yeah, you're talking about Barry Church when he didn't complete the process of the catch, which you need to do also on an interception.
Yeah, I mean, these here plays I have to sit down, I'm the coach, and talk to Eli about. And then the third play that, you know, it was when they were trying to run out the clock there. I guess he faked the hand out and did a pivot and turned around.
Durant almost
and
had him.
Fired
yes.
it there.
I yeah, mean, that was a very,
play,
very close one.
That's a play there, too. If I'm Mr. McAdoo and him, I got to sit down and talk what's going on. These balls shouldn't be thrown. As long as I know what's going on there, you know,
yeah.
I'm not here to criticize because he does drop the ball and they're great and everything. But this stuff's got to be talked to. And same thing, I don't want to come down Mr. Flowers there, but all, you know what I mean, he's got to learn to move his feet and keep his body. That's all he has to do in front of the receiver, keep his hands out, and he'll be better just like that. It's just moving his feet. So, but I want to give praise to Jackrabbit last night and DRC and that. Them guys covered great, too. The guys rushing the ball did great, and the linebackers swarmed to the plays, too.
Yeah.
They did great. So if the offense, again, my God, if they can just not hurt us, we have a chance to do it because we have one of the best defenses in the league. So thanks for getting my call and stay in there. I just hope, you know, I just whatever, because it is frustrating. Everybody wants this. But I would sit down and talk to these people about this stuff and that's about all, because we do have a chance to go places. We have a great defense, one of the best ones there, especially in the NFC now. I don't follow the AFC as much. So thanks for taking my call. God bless. Bye-bye.
All right, Joe.
Appreciate the
phone call. Thanks so much for chiming in.
Wow, amazing considering how when JPP went down just a few days ago, so many folks were really, really, really scared, and with good reason, because that's an impact player taken out of the defense. But these guys show just how far they have come as a unit in this game last night. Bob Papa said something to me right before I came into the show. He said, you know what? I wonder if maybe because the offense has struggled so much, this defense was even that more fortified and gritted its teeth that harder and said, you know what? We've got to do this. We need to stop these guys. We need to win this game because maybe it's not working out so good on the other side. And I don't know that could be too far off. Maybe he's right.
Well, and I think special teams had that mindset too. You know, let's not forget about them.
Hey.
Three facets to a football team some of the others have to pick up for the other facets that are not working.
My old-timers out there will remember how Sam Huff would tell Frank Gifford, go ahead, try and hold him, you know? Giants defense was all about going to the championship game, and yeah, they had Gifford, yeah, they had Connolly, they had Rhodes, they had some skill position guys, they had Alex Webster and so forth and so on, but they weren't a truly an explosive offense until Y.A. Diddle got there.
Well, one way or another, you don't get brownie points, as I always say, for how you go about winning a football game.
Nine and four. And counting.
Absolutely. Big game coming up against the Lions this weekend. We'll certainly get into that in the coming days here on Big Blue Kickoff Live, which is with you each and every weekday at noon Eastern here on Giants.com. Enjoy the rest of your Monday. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. We'll speak to you tomorrow right here on Giants.com. Have a good one.